Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan MacLeod. I'm on a Skype call today with Carlos Rey Marino of the Association of Progressive Communications, who for a number of years now has been involved in a really interesting project to extend affordable voice and data communications to a remote and very poor community in the Eastern Cape. Mankosi, located in the deep rural region between Coffee Bay and Port St. John's in the old Transkei, has about 3,500 residents spread across 12 small villages. Carlos's focus there is finding ways for communities like Mankosi to self-provide more affordable telecommunication services using wireless mesh networks. He has a particular interest in telecoms policy issues, and in addition to the Mankosi project, we're going to talk in this podcast today about government's Electronic Communications Amendment Bill, which I know he has some views on. So, Carlos, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for talking to Tech Central today.
Well, thank you very much. To you to give us this opportunity to talk about these important issues for South Africa.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Carlos. Before we get started and talk about Mankosi, if you don't mind, please tell me a bit about yourself. Where did you grow up and how did you come to South Africa and how did you get involved in the Mankosi community?
Well, I'm Spanish by origin. I'm a telecommunications engineer by training. And I started doing some work in rural and remote clinics in Peru, in particular, clinics that were in the Amazonian jungle that require connectivity for second opinion, for management of urgent transfers of patients, and to reduce the isolation of the doctors there. And for that, we were using wireless networks, Wi-Fi, open source, pretty much trying to reduce the cost of communications to reach out to those clinics. And then throughout time, I got in contact with Professor Bill Tucker from UWC, and he offered me to, by that time, there was the mess potato and the village telco work that Steve Song had been doing, and Bill offered me to try to see whether rural communities in South Africa could use mess potato and that technology to create their own telecommunications infrastructure and to reduce their cost of communications. So kind of that's my story in a nutshell.
Okay, so you met Steve Song, who was behind Village Telco. What was the sort of genesis of those talks, and how did it lead up to the Mankosi community in particular?
So there are two streams of those talks. Like with the work that I was doing in Peru already, we started to realize that technology wasn't the end solution for this. Technology exists, technology is easy to deploy, or it was increasingly easier to deploy, especially with efforts like Steve's. But there were many other things for the sustainability of these projects in rural and remote areas, looking at economic factors, looking at regulatory factors, looking at social factors. And kind of Mankosi, where Bill Tucker had been working also with health-related issues there in the hospitals. He had some contacts in the communities then, and it could be a place where I could test a technology that was said to be a plug and play and be used by lay people to actually explore those other economic, regulatory, and social aspects that are as important as technology in the sense of rural and remote communities to provide themselves with connectivity.
Okay, so this work was really done under the auspices of the University of the Western Cape, is that right?
Yeah, it started there. Yeah, actually, Zenzeleni now is a spin-off of UWC, yes.
Okay, Zenzeleni Networks, which is the non-profit that was created to do this work?
Well, actually, there are two institutions at the moment, and there will be more. From the inception, there was a telecommunications cooperative that was established by the people from Mankosi. I facilitated, I lived in Mankosi for 3 years, understanding all these issues. And together with, and when we realized that some sort of an institution was necessary, the people from Mankosi registered Zenzeleni Networks Mankosi, that is a non-for-profit telecommunications cooperative, fully owned by people from the community itself. And then over time, when we realized the impact that this could have on the area and on the country more broadly, and last year we incorporated Zenzeleni Networks is an MPC that actually provides support to Mankosi, but to other communities in the area and now in Cape Town and in other places in the country, because actually we realized that with a little bit of support, communities can indeed do it by themselves, and the support that you can do to Mankosi, you can give it to many other communities at the same time.
Okay. Carlos, tell me a bit about this project and the technology you used, what you were hoping to achieve, what you did achieve, and what the learnings were from it.
So at the beginning, the project started to actually try to overcome the communications needs of the people in Mankosi. And by the time I started back in 2012, not that many people use the internet or were aware of the internet. So it was based on trying to reduce the cost of voice communications. Mm-hmm. At the time, with the data that I collected, in 2013, 2014, the disposable income that people in Mankosi were using for communications was about 22% of their monthly disposable income. So it is still trying to reduce that cost of communications as much as possible.
22% of their disposable income was going on communication services.
Yeah, and I believe still it is. And with many people that report that sometimes they decide whether buying bread or buying airtime. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is happening in this country and in many other communities that I visited and I interviewed people. So, I mean, the inequality in South Africa is huge. According to the Gini coefficient, I think we are the country with the biggest inequality. Mm. So yeah, there are a lot of places in rural South Africa where this is a reality.
Yes.
And so the idea was trying to do that. At the time, again, Mesh Potato had an inbuilt analog telephone adapter. So we tried with analog phones that were connected to the network that was in the community, that was solar powered, and with some access points to provide access to mobile phones that had voice over IP clients. At the beginning there were 10 access points that were messing between each other, but not that many people used the mobile phone technology. There were not that many Wi-Fi enabled phones. Uh-huh. And analog phones at the time were not, people didn't want to actually go and talk inside the house. So it worked for some time. It proved the concept that the community could set up the network, the community could maintain the network. But at those early stages, most of the revenue came from the energy that was available from the solar panels and people charging their mobile phones with it. But it was an incipient business model that the community could work on. So we wanted to upgrade infrastructure to actually have better coverage so we could reach more people and actually introduce some business model around mobile phones. And by that, we got a grant and we managed to set up a bigger infrastructure and actually to set up a tower and connect to the fiber in Umtata. That was around the beginning of last year. And the school, the high school, started to show interest on unwanted internet connectivity. Mm-hmm. So in the past year or year and a half, we've been focusing on sustaining, trying to be able that the anchor tenants pay the fiber, the internet that we have in Umtata via Eastel, And with that reworking, because now there is much more penetration, we are planning on reintroduce the voice over IP services, right? Okay. But at the same time, we've discovered many other things that were on our submission to the Electronic Communications Act amendment bill that are around GSM spectrum and other things that, if you want, we can talk about as well.
Sure, we'll get to that a little bit later in the discussion. So you've created this mesh network in Mankosi. What exactly is a mesh network? How does it work, Carlos?
Well, Wi-Fi works with mainly two different ways, either as an access point, like in the houses where any Wi-Fi client connect to a hotspot, right? And mesh is actually allowing the hotspots to connect among themselves to share information.
Okay.
So if you have one of the hotspots connected to the internet, all of the other hotspots, and therefore all of the other clients connected to each of the hotspots, can share that internet connection. That allows you to reach coverage to increase your coverage quite easily, and also to share some economies of scale, because the more you grow, the more users you have, especially in sparse populations, and then you can share that only or that one internet connection among many more people, right?
Mm. So reducing the costs in the process, I presume.
Exactly.
Okay. So you mentioned you've now got fiber through a company called Easttel to Umtata. So there's a fiber line coming all the way into this village, is there?
No, the fiber goes... We connect to the fiber in Umtata.
Oh, I see. How do you connect to Umtata from Mankosi?
We use long-distance wireless links.
Microwave backhaul?
Yeah, microwave backhaul using Wi-Fi as well, yes.
Okay, how far is Mankosi from Umtata?
Around 60 to 70 kilometers.
All right. Okay. So it's quite a distance it's traveling. Mm. Okay. Now, the big mobile operators, MTN and Vodacom, make much of their coverage statistics. Both claim to have more than 99% population coverage with their 3G networks. Are the people in Mankosi covered by those networks? And what sort of usage patterns are you seeing, mobile versus the network that you guys have deployed here?
Well, yes, I mean, there is coverage from both Vodacom and MTN, and Cell C and ATA piggyback on them, so you can actually have access from the four of them.
Yes.
It depends where you are, because the Eastern Cape is very hilly. So on top of the hills, you normally, and if you have line of sight to their towers, there is good 3G connectivity. If you are somewhere a bit non on the line of sight behind a hill, then you are going to struggle to actually get any internet whatsoever. And that's the first thing about the internet patterns. The second thing is the capped internet and the cost of internet. I mean, data must fall is not a debate in this country for no reason, right? And we are talking again about people that live in below 400 rands a month, or if you want to put it 600 rands a month. We are talking about data bundles that are, I don't have it off the top of my head, but 30 rands for 20 megabytes. And what you can do with that? We couldn't be talking on Skype. I mean, 20 megabytes would have gone already.
Yes.
And that's for a month. So, yeah, the usage patterns are completely constrained by those capped connections and those prices that actually are taxing the poor, because the more you buy, the cheaper it gets.
Yes.
But then people cannot buy those big bundles. They simply don't have money.
Yeah, yeah. So is the service you're providing in Mankosi an uncapped offering?
At the moment it is, yes. At the moment we are trialing with an uncapped connection that is subsidized by the anchor tenants. So they are paying 10 rands a month, and is unlimited internet.
10 rands a month?
In the access points. It's public access. Eh?
Sure, sure. And people would then connect via what I assume would be quite a basic smartphone with Wi-Fi connectivity?
Exactly. The few that have, that's the way they do it. We are actually trying to get some funds to set up a community center where people could... Because the other thing is digital skills and digital literacy about what the internet can do for them, right?
Mm.
And if they don't even have the devices to do that, that would be that's, you know, is also another constraint in the use. So we are actually trying to set up some sort of a community center with some laptops where community members can actually be not trained but shown what the internet could actually do for them, so they could use the connectivity that now is more affordable for them in a way that solves their needs.
And the people who are using the service at the moment, do you have any insights into what they are using it for mainly?
Well, at the moment, I think most of the people who have smartphones are youth, in the community, and because we haven't had the time to go through this more digital skills training that I was mentioning, some of the qualitative data that we have collected talks about people using it for mainly YouTube and social media communications. I think entertainment is a big thing among people in rural areas.
Okay. Now, is this a carrier grade type service? What sort of speeds does it deliver as well?
Well, at the moment in between Umtata and Mankosi, we have 100 megabit per second capacity. And on the fiber, we have like a 40 megabit per second connection. So it depends on the number of users that connect to the hotspot at the same time, but it could be up to that. Yeah.
Okay, so if there's only one person on the network, it could be 40 megs a second.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It depends on the number of people that are connected simultaneously.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned you'd rolled out the network using solar-powered sites, if that's the right terminology. How does that affect availability? Are there battery backups to power the hotspots at night? Or does the internet disappear at night when there's no sun shining?
No. There is internet the whole time, and there is battery backups everywhere. Actually, in some of the places that we are extending the connectivity at the moment, there is grid electricity, but the grid is actually quite unstable. So it also depends. We are actually upgrading the whole system at the moment. So all the clients as well, they do have a battery system, because sometimes is the routers who go down because of the instability of the grid, right? So there is a battery backup everywhere.
Okay.
Even though some of the communities, everywhere solar powered. In some of the clients, they have electricity, but still everywhere we are trying to have battery backup. So what are the implications? Well, at the end of the day, there is a big implication of the cost, right? Because that cost is not necessary in other places where the grid is considerably more stable.
Indeed.
But beyond that, there is no that much implications on the stability of the network itself.
Okay. So this model that you've deployed in Mankosi, what are the learnings you've taken out of it? And have you started to look at deploying infrastructure in other rural areas in South Africa at this stage?
Well, I mean, the lessons are that it started in Mankosi, right? But now it's in other three communities in the same area. So it's extending very quickly. I think once we had a reliable, affordable backhaul connectivity, this is going to grow incredibly. Only since we have set up some monitoring systems in September, there has been more than 5,000 users in the last 6 months. Since November to now, we have 6,000 users in the network. And so it's already growing, and it's already in other communities. We are in conversations to set up new cooperatives. There are anchor tenants asking to extend the connectivity. So having that and having the, it's kind of one of the first things. But the most important part that we've learned is that communities can do it by themselves if provided enough training and enough support. I think there is a premise on the South African internet ecosystem that it needs to be people from towns and big companies that are the only ones who can provide internet connectivity into rural areas and provide, connect the unconnected. But I think that paradigm needs to be reconsidered, because actually the unconnected can connect themselves and are doing it.
Yeah.
And are doing it with very big qualities and you know, allowing that some of that revenue remain local instead of going again back to Sandton and Cape Town and all the places, right? So there is a very big, so that's the other thing. The revenue can actually remain local. It's not only the skills. It's not only that they can do it. It's also the impact and the benefits that it has on the local communities that are doing this.
Yeah. And there's a transfer of skills as well, and people learn about these technologies, I suppose. What about the model that you've developed here? Are you making it available to anyone who's interested in replicating what you've done in Mankosi anywhere else in the country? If someone comes knocking on your door and says, "I really like what you've done there. Can you help us do it?" Will you share with them a almost like an operating manual of how to replicate the Mankosi model elsewhere?
At the moment, because this is done by four people almost on a voluntary basis,
right.
And this growth since since September, that period in between September, November, and now, there are 10 anchor tenants, there are these 5,000 users, there is the upgrade of the infrastructure, etc. There is so much you can do, right?
Sure.
At the moment, we have received funding from the Technology Innovation Agency through the University of the Western Cape. And with that funding, we are aiming to consolidate a bit of those positions and being able to create that model that you are talking about. At the moment, it's only on our head somehow and in some Excel sheets here and there, but it's difficult to share because it's evolving all the time. We are learning every day. But it's based on I don't know if you have heard about Gifinet in Spain. It's an ecosystem, it's a community network where different service providers, they build and share the infrastructure in commons as a common pool resource. So actually what we would like to see is that, yes, everyone in this country shares the infrastructure as commons because it benefits everyone inside that ecosystem. It benefits the users, it benefits the service providers, it benefits... And actually, it contributes to universal affordable access for everyone, or that Internet for All program that the government is trying to champion.
Well, let's talk a bit about the government now and the planned changes to the legislation that governs the telecoms industry in South Africa. You and I both attended the recent public hearings on the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. The bill has attracted some praise, but also a lot of criticism over a planned wholesale open access network, or WOAN. I unfortunately couldn't sit in on the Zenzeleni Networks presentation that you made. I had to dash off to another meeting. But you did make a detailed submission to, written and verbal submission to the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. What is your broad take on the draft bill, and what's good about it, and in your view, what's not good about it?
Well, I think the intention of the bill and the intention of the white paper is right, right? And as I'm saying, there is a huge inequality and a huge imbalance in the South African internet ecosystem. There is a big concentration. There is a big interest on the people who have money and the people who have resources. I mean, those consumers that can pay for the internet. And there was a need to actually tackle the big inequality that exists in access in the country. So from that side, I think the analysis is right and something needs to be done. From there, I think there are some things in the amendment bill that definitely are welcome. I mean, the intention is definitely welcome, and other things that could be done differently or better, right? Especially for this type of initiatives, and especially if you look at what is happening in other places of the world and with regards to universal affordable access. And for instance, for me it's of interest that this case of Gifinet that I was saying, Gifinet started and well has more than 100,000 users and it has accumulated over time more than more than 7 million euros capex in investment from all the different internet service providers inside the Giphy ecosystem, and with an opex of more than 3 million euros a year. And that's with infrastructure running commons. It's shared infrastructure. It's in itself is a WAN. Mm-hmm. It's a wireless open access network. So I think it obviously is different, the mobile network I mean, ecosystem than the Wi-Fi ecosystem, where in South Africa you see as well many WAPA operators collaborating among them. But I think it's possible, and it's happening in other countries. I just think the focus has been put in the interest of those companies that want profit, and sometimes too much profit at the expense of those living under the threshold of poverty. So we need to open our range of views, our range of options to actually tackle the particular case where in South Africa is. I don't think the conversations as they are going for the one are going to tackle the inequality in rural and remote South Africa anytime soon. In those 2 days, it was about the interest of the big operators, the rural areas, the scarce spectrum. And we can talk about the scarce spectrum. I've been driving around with a monitoring equipment, monitoring the spectrum usage in between East London and Coffee Bay. And the 800 band is empty.
Okay.
So all this discussion around the scarce spectrum is because they want more spectrum for urban areas. The rural areas no one is actually taken care of or don't have any interest of. So I think, yeah, the focus should be more on what are the solutions that are out there to actually try to tackle that huge inequality in between urban and rural South Africa. And I think releasing the TV White Spaces regulation, like it was done a couple of weeks ago, and I mean the interview that you had with Roger Hislop, I think talked a lot into this direction, no? On how this type of technologies, dynamic spectrum type of regulations and technologies, can actually enable different business models in rural areas. Can definitely enable smaller operators and communities to actually do it by themselves and reduce their dependency on these bigger operators providing a blanket coverage that and blanket business models to the country that are simply not working.
Mm-hmm. So what, Carlos, would you like to see in the electronic communications bill? We ran a story just this morning saying that government is reworking the bill, redrafting the bill now with a view to providing further information to Parliament next month. And we don't know what the redraft is going to say exactly, but what would you like to see incorporated in the bill that would specifically help rural communities get connected?
Well, for me, there is something that is welcome in principle, but I don't know how it's going to be applied in practice. That is the principle of use it or lose it, is what I'm saying. It might be rewarded on use it or share it, right? Because maybe during some time, you know, maybe during the first years, they don't see usage of that spectrum, and then it can be used over time. But those bands in 900 that are empty in rural areas, those bands that are empty in 800, they could have been used by non-for-profits like Senseleni for the last 5 years.
Yes.
And I've been requesting access to these bands that I know they are empty. I've been monitoring them and they are empty. Mm-hmm. And that operators are doing nothing with them. It's a resource that is idle. And people in Mankosi, for instance, if they had access to that spectrum, they could reduce their voice costs from 22% of the disposable income to 3% of the disposable income, right? And this is happening, for instance, in Mexico. You have the case of Rizomatica, where the government has allocated two times five megahertz for social purpose licensing on GSM spectrum on the band of 900. And Rizomatica, using that spectrum, has already facilitated that 20 communities that didn't have access to communications now are providing voice and data communications to themselves using that particular spectrum. In the case of South Africa, that could be easily done. There is a band in 900. There is a 1.4 megahertz band that is owned by Cell C that is empty in between East London and Coffee Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these deployments that I'm talking, that Rizomatica does, is doing them with a twice 2 megahertz slot. So with 1.4, we could do a lot. So why don't we try to rework in the spectrum, I mean, in the amendments, a more explicit ways of use it or lose it and use it or share it, especially for non-for-profit or historically disadvantaged communities in especially rural areas.
Yeah.
I think that would be critical to do. There is a lot of spectrum sitting idle that could be managed with a similar geolocation database than the one that has been put up for TV wide spaces. Is a concept that could be used in a similar way for GSM, in a similar way for the WAN, in a way that could benefit communities that are ready to use that spectrum. It's a resource that is sitting idle and that could be easily contribute to bridge the different digital divides that exist in South Africa, right? So that would be one of the first things that I would say would be critical. Allow different licensing of the GSM spectrum, or different arrangements in between owners and other operators. At the moment, there is no use it or share it. That is probably the more conducive for mobile operators to enter this type of agreements. Are not quite clear. Another one that I think it would be very very interesting in the is around transparency. It's around transparency and visibility of what's going on how big these gaps are. You are asking me what is the pattern, the coverage, all that. That data should be collected by, or if it's not, ICASA should have that data from mobile network operators. Where are their towers? Where is the height of the towers and the radios? What is the coverage areas that they have? Again, similar to the geolocation database that from TV White Spaces, but for GSM and for 3G and for LTE. In that sense, we would be able to know what is the size of the gap, what is happening, where is happening, where civil society or other non-for-profit operators or other for-profit operators could actually want to go and deploy their networks. At the moment, it's totally impossible to have any sort of planning because we don't know where the gaps are. So we are requesting the government to make provisions in the act. So it requests that information for all the operators and is made public openly. So everyone know where the gaps are. Like in the public consultation, WAPA was mentioning that in between Durban and some other areas in KwaZulu-Natal, the cost to fiber is 100%. I mean, there is 100 times bigger in rural areas of KwaZulu-Natal than it is in the middle of Durban. And that also applies to us. The price of fiber that we need to pay in Umtata is not the same that you need to pay in Cape Town. And I don't know what would be the price of a fiber connection that we would have to pay in Coffee Bay, right? Making public all that information so you could compare and see where the gaps are is actually very critical. So we are requesting that to happen as well.
Yes.
And also to look at what I was saying, to look at the commons, to look at the common pool resources models to run the WAN. I think the discussion has been going on trying to satisfy the mobile network operators and to look at other type of infrastructure. But I think common pool resources, that they were given the Nobel Prize of Economic when Elinor Ostrom wrote the Governing the Commons book, they are proving that it could be effective ways to run this WAN as well. And then lastly, probably on funding. I think at the moment, the funding, as I was saying, is going to some bigger operators that are from the cities, coming to rural areas with their own skills, taking not only the funding for the CAPEX, but also the ongoing revenue from the OPEX. So it's the skills, the CAPEX, and the OPEX that are given to urban companies to try to take that from rural areas, that keep deepening the gap in between urban and rural, keep rural areas underdeveloped. And I think there should be provisions in the DDF, in the Digital Development Fund, whenever they create it, to actually have a stronger focus on local providers and on those that are willing and able to do from the rural areas, and those more bottom-up operators, I would say.
Okay.
So, yeah, around that. I mean, I think there are good steps as well. The government has created this preferential procurement in the SMME strategy, by which, you know, they want to to get 30% of their procurement made by SMEs. I think there is a good side and a good, again, the intention is good and there are actions that are going. I think is more information about what's going on in the country itself and in other places of the world around how these bottom-up solutions could really contribute to bridge the gap.
Carlos, before I let you go today, I wanted to, you touched on TV white spaces spectrum and the publication of the regulations recently by ICASA in the interview we had with Roger Hislop. I think it was last week. What's your take on TV white spaces? Are you, given the regulations are out now, are you tempted to approach ICASA and perhaps look at starting to experiment with this technology, maybe in the Mankosi community? Do you see real potential for it?
I think there is definitely a space. I think as I said, I welcome the publication of the regulations, and I think it can really contribute in different areas. I think we could potentially use them. At the moment, we have a very robust Wi-Fi backhaul. But TV white spaces is great. The thing is that the Eastern Cape is very particular because of the hills and because of the locations of the towers. So you get some sort of line of sight to many places. But the same problem I was mentioning before with the mobile operators apply for Wi-Fi, right? And for non-line of sight communication. So to reach some areas and to reach some anchor tenants, definitely TV white spaces, because of its great propagation characteristics, is going to definitely be something that we will consider. So the other thing around that in the regulations that is very interesting is the power levels. The power levels that together with the lower band where TV white spaces operates is going to allow great coverage. So that's very interesting as well to reach farther clients. But in order to pilot it and in order to trial, we need to understand a bit more how the geolocation database is going to work, what are the steps to actually interact with the geolocation database. So we need to do a bit more of research. And again, we are so under-resourced that is very difficult to do everything at the same time. So we are willing to test it. We are willing to share all of our lessons learned with everyone else. But it's a question of capacity.
Of course. Carlos Ray Marino of the Association of Progressive Communications, thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today. We'll be keeping a very close eye on your work and the progress you're making in connecting a rural community. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Duncan.